This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Taylor Quimby, sitting in for Virginia Prescott. Many of the laws we abide by are rooted in solid legal precedents and logic. Bribery is illegal, for example. You can't drive in the U.S. without a valid driver's license. The taking of goods from a store without paying is punishable by law. But some laws are just plain bizarre. For instance, this law from North Carolina.
If any person shall take and carry away, or shall aid in taking or carrying away, any ginseng growing upon the lands of another person with intent to steal the same, he shall be punished as a Class H felon.
Kevin Underhill is a lawyer in San Francisco and also author of the legal humor blog, Lowering the Bar. His new book, The Emergency Sasquatch Ordinance, is a collection of real laws, historical and modern, that all sound a little bit crazy. Kevin, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me.
Some of the historical laws you write about earlier in the book, tell us a lot about the cultures that created them. For example, you write about the legal value of a beard in medieval Russia. And I'm wondering if you can just explain to our listeners, what was that law? And then what might it tell us about medieval Russians?
Yeah, that one was similar to a lot of other ancient laws. They would establish fines for things. In other words, instead of jail time, you would have fines, sometimes worked out between the families involved and sometimes by the state. And this one was, I thought, was unusual because the fine for shaving off somebody's beard was several times the fine for cutting off one of his fingers.
Shaving their beard against their will, I guess we should specify.
Yeah, that's what I assume. I think at the time, and still in some cultures, you know, the facial hair has religious significance. So it was, I think that was part of it, and maybe also that was a status symbol. But that's the only reason I can think of that a beard would be worth more than, you know, even one finger, let alone several.
Another one of my favorite sort of origin stories that you've got in the book was the original meaning of strip search, which apparently had a very different context for the ancient Greeks.
Yes, and that's one of the laws for which you suspect there might be a translation issue or a matter of interpretation because we just don't have the context for it. But apparently the way it worked is that, you know, instead of the police searching you to see if you stole something, this provided that if you thought someone had stolen from you, you could go over to their house and search it. But to make sure you didn't smuggle something in and plan it, you had to take off your clothes before you went into their home.
So it's
kind of the reverse.
Yeah, so you're searching, but you're naked. You're searching after you've stripped.
Yeah, basically, I think the most they could wear was a loincloth.
So let's move on. Let's get to the laws of the United States. You've got so many to talk about. One, Congress recently banned lunatics, apparently. Another interesting piece, if you lose an arm, you can legally use a switchblade. So tell us about some of these laws. How did you discover and research them all?
Well, I started out by looking at various sources that are out there. I mean, there have been books before this one on, you know, stupid laws, and then there are some websites about that too. But what you find very often is that if you go to try and look up the law, it doesn't exist.
Huh.
Because it's maybe it's an urban legend or maybe it's just been misinterpreted to make it funny. But there is a lot of stuff out there that's real. So that's where I started. And then I sort of launched into a project of reading the codes, or at least the table of contents of all the codes. And my part of my plan was to just be able to say that I was the only person that had at least scan the table of contents of all 50 volumes of the U.S. Code.
Right.
But by the time I got to the banking and financial regulations, I pretty much gave up on that. One thing I learned was that it's a lot more productive to go directly to the criminal code, and especially the sections on, it's usually called something like offenses against decency and morality. And you can always find stupid stuff there. In any state's laws, there will be some ridiculous provisions in there.
So some of these in your book are prohibiting people from doing something, but a lot of the others actually stipulate what you can do. For example, you write that it's legal to mail a live scorpion. So why would you need to draft a law reassuring the public that something like that is legal?
Well, in that particular one, it's really to tell people how to do it, I think.
Like how to properly mail a scorpion.
Right. You have to, you know, you have to enclose it in certain things. You know, it has to be able to breathe, but you also don't want it to get out. And so there's various various restrictions. You know, people will be glad to know you can't ship them by air. But it had never struck me before that people would want to mail a live scorpion. And I guess it's for research, but, you know, it's nice to know you could do it if you really needed to.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm going to keep that in my back pocket.
It does have to be... Yeah, it does have to be clearly labeled, which I think is a good idea.
So it may come as no surprise to Californians, but you do point out that there are many, many specific laws in that state, plus a few laws in specific cities in California that have some wacky laws. We've got comic books must be less than 80% mayhem. One may not soak a rabbit carcass for more than 2.5 hours, tops. San Francisco, you can't be naked in public unless you're in a parade. I think that one kind of makes sense when you think about the context. But I'm wondering, why do you think California is so beset with these highly specific and seemingly inconsequential laws?
Well, one, it's, you know, it's a big state with a fairly long history. You know, if you look at states like, I guess, you know, Utah or Hawaii, I mean, they're not really very productive for this kind of research because they're not that old. And
right.
California is, you know, it doesn't go back to the 1700s, but it's fairly old, and it's so large that it just has a very high volume of legislation. And California has got a lot of stuff that dates back to the 1800s, and they've never cleaned it up.
Well, it looks like New Hampshire got off pretty easy. Did you find any in the Granite State worth mentioning?
Now, there I've got to look it up. I find any?
The appendix. I think there was one.
Right. It's a very broad prohibition on unlicensed shows and open-air meetings, and I'll just read the first part of it. It says, "No showman, tumbler, rope dancer, ventriloquist, or other person shall, for pay, exhibit any feats of agility, horsemanship, sleight of hand, rope dancing, or feats with cards or any animals, wax figures, puppets, or other show, without a license from the selectmen of the town." So at one point, maybe you still do. I don't know. Do you have traveling troops of rope dancers?
I was just about
puppeteers?
To say, this explains why I've never seen a rope dancer in Concord.
But... Yeah, it could be. It could be, yeah. Ventriloquists, outdoor ventriloquists.
Gosh, yeah. You know, we definitely seem to be lacking a lot of those as well.
Yeah, this law must be working then, I guess.
Yeah. So, New England in general, you mentioned Vermont and Maine both seem to escape the book. But Connecticut gets it pretty bad. We found a few from there. You can't hunt squirrels with dynamite.
Yeah, the hunting, you know, some of these are provisions that you do find in other states. And, you know, a particular one is just sort of the stand-in. And there are a number of laws where they prohibit the hunting of animals with things that you don't really associate with hunting, like this one is, you know, dynamite, you know, not chemical weapons per se, but that's basically what they're talking about. Brimstone is one of them. I'm not even sure what that means, to tell you the truth.
But hunting squirrels with brimstone?
Yeah, you can't use. I mean, brimstone is an old word for sulfur, but. So I think sulfur is also listed in the law. So, I haven't been able to figure out why brimstone is in there. But if you have some, you can't use it to hunt squirrels with.
Now, I get the sense when you look at most of the laws in these books that they are just very reactionary, and that maybe that says a lot about how laws in this country and, I guess, in general get made. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I mean, they get, in one sense, because they get passed, you know, in reaction to problems that exist or are just perceived to exist, and then reactionary in the sense that they don't get changed easily. And I think the reason for that is because you know, it's easy for a legislator to take credit for, you know, doing something if they pass a law, and that's what they, you know, they like to take credit for that. But it's very rare that anybody gets any publicity for repealing something.
So I'd imagine that after all the examples in this book, it's probably pretty hard to surprise you when it comes to odd laws. Was there one in particular that was just really shocking or surprising to you?
You know, I guess if you had to press me, I think I would say that probably the Texas law on what you would call the marital aids. They have, and lots of states actually have laws restricting the, you know, sale or promotion of those things.
Wait, marital aids? Are we using a euphemism right now?
Yes, I am. Maybe it's Well, I guess I was on Fox News to talk about this, and they called them sex toys. So I guess it's okay to do that on public radio.
Yeah, also. Okay. We'll let it.
We're talking about sex toys. Okay. Lots of states have these regulations on these sort of intimate things, and I'm pretty sure that they're all unconstitutional, but they're still on the books. But a couple of strange things about the laws they had in Texas was they had a limit of 5 per person. And basically, I think what was happening is they had a law against promoting them, you know, for selling them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what they were looking at were laws from the war on drugs where, you know, how do they know if you're dealing as opposed to just for personal use? It's like if you have more than a particular amount, they'll assume you're dealing. So in Texas, they decided that would be 5.
Uh-huh.
And I just can't, you know, I can't understand. Maybe that's just one of those legislative compromises that somebody wanted 10 and somebody wanted 1 and they just agreed on 5. But so I haven't been able to explain that one. And then there's also a provision that said it doesn't apply to anyone who possesses them for a variety of uses, and of course medical is one of them, but it also refers to judicial or legislative purposes. And so I'm still waiting for somebody to tell me what official legislative purposes they might have those for.
Well, we're going to leave our listeners pondering that very, very profound question. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure. Thanks very much.
Kevin Underhill is a lawyer and the author of the legal humor blog Lowering the Bar. His new book is The Emergency Sasquatch Ordinance and Other Real Laws That Human Beings Have Actually Dreamed Up, Enacted, and Sometimes Even Enforced. You can find a link to the book and Kevin's blog at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.